Welcome to episode 274 of the Microsoft Cloud IT Pro Podcast, recorded live on March 21st, 2022. This is a show about Microsoft 365 and Azure from the perspective of IT pros and end users, where we discuss the topic or recent news and how it relates to you. Shared Channels and Microsoft Teams is entering the public preview phase any day now. It should be the end of March 2022. In today's episode, we've sifted through the documentation and discussed the finer details that you should pay attention to, especially when it comes to B2B Direct Connect and cross-tenant access settings in Azure AD.
Welcome to episode 274 of the Back to Work. That's a different one. Of the Microsoft Cloud IT Pro podcast, brought to you today by caffeine and lack of sleep.
I thought you were on vacation.
I was, but the whole the angst of having to come back in on a Monday after a week off where I did not check any email for a week. And yeah, I was just like, I'm going to have one of those days where I'm either going to declare email bankruptcy or I'm going to have to sift through 3,000 emails. And that's not going to be fun. So rather than declaring bankruptcy, I opted for the hard path. You know, like who likes life with an easy button? So I think I'm almost through all my email. I was actually able to Control-A about half of it and just shove it off to the bin.
I'm impressed. But I will say, despite that, at least you did not go jump your brand new Tesla, your $150,000 Tesla, 50 feet into the air and total it.
I did not, but that was a great video.
Did you see this? I'm about halfway through that video. I have not watched it all yet. I can't imagine the thought process that went on.
There's a reward offered for information on the driver who jumped that Tesla in Echo Park, by the way.
So if you're in Echo Park and you're listening to this and you have any information, go make some money.
I recommend somebody go watch the video. So it's in Los Angeles and there is just this great video of someone taking a Tesla up a pretty severe incline. And it's kind of one of those roads that just humps over. And they get a very moderate amount of air as they launched off one side of that, like through the stop sign, like clearing the heads of people who were standing off to the side and recording it. And, you know, it wasn't exactly a clean landing, definitely overshot a couple of things. So yeah, pretty interesting. Ran into another car down the street.
Not recommended.
If you've got any information about that.
Totaled a few garbage cans.
I'm sure the police in LA would love to hear from you.
Yes, I need to finish watching it. I'm kind of like the same video. I don't condone this, nor recommend this, nor any sort of that. But the fact that they were able to get a Tesla, I mean, those things are not light with the batteries in them. Those are heavy cars. The fact that it got that high off the ground and flew that far, it's kind of wild.
Yeah. Well, maybe someday we'll get to have fun like that, but that's not today. We're going to have other kinds of fun.
Yeah, although I don't know that I want to have that kind of fun because I really don't want the police coming looking for me, nor does the rest of my family.
Well, you want that kind of fun without consequences.
Okay, there you go. That's fair. Or I would just like the fun of having a Tesla. I mean, I don't know. Who has that kind of money? Or did they not actually think they were going to total their Tesla?
Yeah, you know, it's a lease.
Like, why would you do that with a $150,000 car?
That's what insurance is for. It was an older car. It was a 2018 Model S. You know, that thing was probably beat up anyway.
Anyways, yes, that is not what we're going to talk about today. We're going to talk about a new feature that was announced, well, almost exactly a year ago, I guess. So this article, ironically, was from March 21. The article from Mary Jo Foley, I think, was March 21, if I remember it right, because I don't have it up anymore, where Microsoft announced this thing called shared channels in Microsoft Teams.
Yes. So this is a little bit of a weird one. It was announced, like you said, a long time ago. So back in March 2021.
I think that was Spring Ignite, right?
Yeah. So there's going to be some new things, Microsoft Teams to add shared channels. encryption for calls, webinar features to Teams. And some of those things have come out in the course of time, like webinar features, breakout rooms, encryption for calls, things like that. But shared channels has kind of taken a while to come to the forefront and finally get out the door into something that customers can get hands-on with. And it's a little bit of a weird beast now that it's here.
Yeah, that might be putting it mildly. So I'm looking forward to this feature. First and foremost, I really do want to give this a try. The premise of shared channels, not to be confused with on-premises. On-premise and on-premises are two different things, just pet peeve if anybody's listening. The premise of shared channels is that you can collaborate around a channel in Teams now without leaving the tenant you're signed into. So the way it works today, prior to shared channels, is that if I wanted to have Scott at Microsoft or Scott at wherever he happens to be collaborate with me around a team or a channel in Teams, I would have to go and invite your user as a guest account. So do the whole B2B guest account thing. You would get an invite. You could log in. But in order for you to actually see the content and collaborate with me, you'd have to go up to your little picture in the upper right-hand corner and say, switch to Ben's Intelligent tenant or the podcast tenant, whatever tenant we are. And you'd actually like log out of your existing tenant, log into the new tenant as a guest, and be able to collaborate.
Yeah, there's no version of fast account switching there like there is in the mobile client. So I think we talked about this a couple weeks ago with fast account switching coming to other components of Microsoft land, like the admin center, things like that. But Teams is not one of those applications, unfortunately, that is getting fast account switching on day one. But we do have this other feature called Microsoft Teams Connect Shared Channels, which is rolling out to public preview. So it's still in a relatively new state. This isn't something that's like GA'd and widely rolling out across all deployment rings or anything like that. It's a kick the tires kind of feature to see if, in its current incarnation at least, it's going to work the way that you want it to. So can you effectively collaborate with multiple organizations in that shared space of a shared channel? We're going to get like, right. We're going to get really weird with terminology here in this one. There's no way not to.
Yes, again, because in theory, instead of that account switching, now if a channel is shared with you using this new shared channel, it just shows up in the tenant that it was shared too. So going back to my example of now, I at IntelliJink share a channel with Scott at Microsoft. He no longer has to switch to the IntelliJink channel, but my shared channel will show up somewhere in his Teams. I don't have this yet. I keep checking like every day for it. It'll show up in my Teams, so, or his Teams. So you can access that channel that's been shared with you without having to worry about the account switching, is in theory how this should all work.
Theoretically, yes. You would have this label for what is a shared channel. And when I say label, really like icon, I guess, on the team itself, or more specifically, the channel that's been shared out. And then within that channel that you shared, you get kind of standard Teams functionality along the way. So you can schedule a meeting in that channel. You can share a document through it because you get kind of SharePoint and files and things in the background. You get all the niceties of Office web apps that comes with that. So co-authoring of those files, there's a kind of the standard slate of Teams apps, kind of like tab apps that are available to you as well to go ahead and configure within that space.
Yeah. And the first thing that I would say that caught my eye when going and creating these new shared channels is, can I essentially take an existing channel? So what, Teams has been out for 5 years now. I think we've had channels essentially since day one. I have a lot of Teams with a lot of channels already created. And I'm like, great, I have these users that are guest users. Can I just go make these channels shared channels? And the answer is no, you may not.
It is a new channel type. So you have the kind of existing channel types of standard and private channels. And now you have a new extension on top of that, which is a shared channel. Although one of the things that I really like about the way this is kind of manifested as a feature over private channels is there's no requirement when you're creating a new shared channel to first add those external identities or even internal identities to the team to give them access to it. You're effectively saying like, hey, here's this island of a place where we're going to do some cross-org collaboration. And you don't have that kind of mental overhead of saying, great, did I create the team? Okay, I created the team. Did I create the channel? Like in the case of a private channel, did I create the private channel? All right, but now that I created the private channel, even though General was kind of a private channel when I first started this thing, now all of a sudden I'm going to have this new private channel and to add the user to the private channel, I have to add them to the team. And once I've added them to the team, then I need to go and add them to the channel and make it like really private. Like there's just a lot of cognitive right. overload and kind of mental friction to get through that model. So theoretically, this all is far more seamless and far less friction in that, yes, you have to create a new channel, but you'll just say, hey, I'm creating a new shared channel and I'm going to add users to that channel, just like you would add users to a team normally through like the team management interface, and you're off to the races.
Yes, which is going to be interesting. So kind of to your point, I'm assuming this would work like a private channel from the perspective of that if you would add users to the team, they wouldn't necessarily see the shared channel because it does have unique permissions both internally as well as externally. But I don't, yeah. They don't really call that out in this documentation at all that I have seen as of yet.
No. So you have to kind of start digging into things. And once you start peeling back the layers, you go like, oh, that's interesting. And oh, that's something else that requires preview functionality. And it's not just Teams or SharePoint Online or Exchange anymore. Like you start getting into weird things with identity. So once you start getting into the documentation for shared channels, one of the very first things you'll run across, like especially if you're going through like the public docs and blog posts and things like that, is that the way that shared channels are designed, you can share that channel with as many organizations as you can specify in the Azure AD cross-tenant access policy. And the first time I read that, I was like, oh, that's new. What the heck is a cross-tenant access policy? So you go and kind of like Google, Bing, DuckDuckGo, you know, search engine of choice thing. And you'll end up on an article along the lines of cross-tenant access overview or cross-tenant access with Azure AD external identities, paren preview, and close paren, and also the B2B direct kind of setup documentation. So you end up in this place where you're not only saying like, hey, we're going to use shared channels in our org, but you're going to have other organizational controls that are going to need to be put in place on the resource Azure AD tenant. So effectively the tenant where the shared channel lives, that you're going to control things like inbound access settings there. So what are the external users and groups that you're going to allow or block? What are the internal apps that you are going to allow or block? What about things like trust settings? So that could be MFA claims. It could be things about hybrid Azure AD joined device claims, compliant device claims. Like all those kinds of things start to manifest together within your resource Azure AD tenant and then ultimately tying back to like, you know, in your case, if you're setting something up in the intelligent tenant, you'd be the resource AD tenant. A resource AD tenant. And if I'm coming from like the Microsoft Cloud IT Pro podcast.com tenant, then my home tenant has some other settings there as well. So like there's this kind of collaboration that's needed even at like the org to org level to make sure that you're aligned on things like access settings. So are you allowing the same internal users and groups from your home tenant to have outbound access over to the resource AD tenant, and has the resource AD tenant allowed those things within their tenancy as well. So it gets like really muddy really fast. You know, it kind of presents as this great forward facing feature, and then you go, all right, I want to actually spin this up. Oh, there's some other configuration that I need to do. And how do I even know? Like, I don't know. In this case, like, I want to come from the Microsoft Cloud IT Pro podcast tenant over to IntelliJink. That's great. I know who Ben is and who to talk to. And I know who the Azure AD admin is to spin that work up and get it all in place and make sure we're aligned. I don't know how you do that in some kind of major organizations where you'd potentially want this to just work.
Right. Because what you'll quickly find as you sort through the documentation is, let's say like me as IntelliJink wanted to share something with you at Microsoft or any other big organization. It's not just that I have to go into my tenant and give permissions for you to come in and access a channel I've shared. This is a configuration that has to be done on both tenants.
Yeah, so it gets weird because you go from this cross-tenant access policy directly kind of into B2B direct connect settings. And by default in just Azure AD B2B land, so B2B collaboration between Azure AD tenants, by default is enabled. Like that just works across the board. And
the whole guest access thing, right? Guest access that we've used in the past.
And that's set up and ready to go. But because this relies on B2B direct connect as well, there is going to be some configuration, because while B2B collaboration or kind of cross-tenant guest access is allowed by default or enabled by default, B2B direct connect is blocked by default. So you need to go in and configure your outbound access settings, your inbound access settings, any of your trust settings, like anything. Like if you're on the inbound side, like you're going to have to make some choices about conditional access policies, whether you're going to require MFA, compliant devices, all that kind of stuff to get it to where it needs to be. And that makes it a little bit more difficult, because that direct connect trust relationship, like I guess we're back to like just AD kind of trust semantics, that connection between those two things is not there by default. Like it's disabled. So you need to go and turn that on. I think like in some cases, like I said, that's easy. In other cases, that's potentially a bigger deal.
Right. Like me, for example, I'm like, you know what? I'm going to want to try this out. I'm going to want to play with this. I'm going to want to be able to do this with other companies. I'm just going to go enable these for everybody. So by default, you can go in and say, I'm going to enable this for all domains, for all users, for all applications. Someone like me, small company, it's not that big a deal to do this. Some of these large enterprises, that is not just a simple, let's go turn this on. And until you go in and enable this, shared channels aren't going to be there. And
yeah, I think it's not even that they're not going to be there. It's like you want them to be there. So you go and you think you're doing the right thing and you turn this on. And you might make some weird decisions along the way. Like I think it's a perfectly valid thing to say, like, oh, the way this is configured, it really is, you know, it's sold as a trust relationship between two Azure AD tenancies. So I really shouldn't be opening it up to everything. Like I should not take a dump of all the guest users in my current directory today and say like, all right, here's the list of all the domains that I need to add to the allow list and let them in for like inbound access over to my shared channels. So you run this very real risk of going and configuring things like this and saying like, all right, I'm going to put this on the allow list and I'm going to put this on the disallow or the block list. And all of a sudden you've actually blocked access to some business critical application or a business process that was supported by existing kind of B2B collaboration and things that were already in place. So it could get a little bit dicey for you. If it's not like something that scares you because you know your business, it's still one of those things where you probably are going to have to go out and make sure that you really know your business and kind of what's going on across orgs, not just orgs within your business, but you know, that B2B kind of org to org scenario, so that you can configure things in the right way, because you're going to have to spend some time talking with stakeholders in your business to get everything configured the way that it actually needs to be.
Yeah. Do you feel overwhelmed by trying to manage your Office 365 environment? Are you facing unexpected issues that disrupt your company's productivity? IntelliJink is here to help. Much like you take your car to the mechanic that has specialized knowledge on how to best keep your car running, IntelliJink helps you with your Microsoft Cloud environment because that's their expertise. IntelliJink keeps up with the latest updates in the Microsoft Cloud to help keep your business running smoothly and ahead of the curve. Whether you are a small organization with just a few users up to an organization of several thousand employees, they want to partner with you to implement and administer your Microsoft Cloud technology. Visit them at IntelliJink.com/podcast. That's IntelliJink.com/podcast for more information or to schedule a 30-minute call to get started with them today. Remember, IntelliJink focuses on the Microsoft Cloud so you can focus on your business. The other thing that quickly jumped out at me too as I was looking through this documentation is we talked about how you can set up these trust settings, and you can go in and limit those down. So you could go in and configure trust settings to apply to certain users, to certain groups, certain applications. But guess what, Scott? If you want to go in and narrow this down, it requires an Azure Active Directory Premium P1 license or above.
Yeah, so there is that.
So there's also that to take into account is maybe you want to like roll this out or test this out, or you want to scope this down more. More and more, I'm finding that if you really want to do anything from a security perspective, other than just kind of take what Microsoft gives you as defaults, I more and more recommend, I'm like, just go get Azure AD Premium Plan 1 right off the bat. It's going to save you so much headache down the road, especially if you have to go fight for budget again.
Yeah.
Like Azure AD Premium, a P1 or a P2, but at least get a P1 right off the bat, because more and more, like it or not, it's quickly becoming a requirement to do pretty much anything from a security perspective when it comes to Active Directory, whether it's conditional access or MFA beyond just the authenticator push notification or this shared channels and being able to limit that and scope that a little bit more. P1 kind of becomes a no-brainer aside from the cost of it.
Yeah. Well, you know, all good things cost money. So whether you think it should cost money or not, like that's a whole different discussion. But I think when you do want this kind of advanced functionality or kind of the plus one functionality to things, you really do need to consider those kind of add-on or bolt-on licenses as meaningful things. Like they're not just additional costs for you. They're the cost of doing business.
Yep. So we'll put a link to this one in the show notes. It's cross-tenant access with Azure AD external identities in parentheses preview.
Yep.
So you can go look at it. But if you are curious about shared channels, go read this right away. Just start off reading this and getting a feel for that, because you're going to need to know about it, understand that, to take that next step with shared channels and teams. So the other thing I did pull out of here, Scott, that we didn't talk about is we talked about shared channels being their own bucket. Guess what that means from a SharePoint perspective when something gets made its own bucket?
it's just that classic site collection proliferation. What's wrong with that?
Right. It is another site collection.
Everybody loves site collection. Site collection for you, site collection for you, site collection for everybody.
So if you're keeping track, you now get a folder and a shared document library for a normal standard channel. So this goes in the same site collection with general, and it's just a folder in the document library. But if you're going to go create a private channel, or if you're going to go create a shared channel, it is going to be those separate site collections for each of those. Good news is Microsoft already fixed the whole look at what private channels have site collections and how they're all tied together. So it sounds like from this, shared channels is going to show up the same way, that you'll be able to essentially go find that parent site collection and view any, not really sub-site collections, any associated site collections with that parent team site collection, both from a shared channel perspective as well as from that private channel perspective.
Yeah. So maybe something to consider there is that not only are these additional site collections, so you maybe have some additional overhead kind of on the admin side, just seeing this new proliferation of miniature site collections because they're only connected to a single channel. And you know, there's probably only so much damage that folks can do with a single channel and a single library, things like that. But another consideration for you is that these things live inside of your SharePoint tenancy. And you go like, duh, yeah, absolutely they do. Well, that also means that they inherit existing configuration within your environment as well. So all these things that we talked about on the like B2B Direct Connect side of things of saying, hey, let's make sure you know you've configured MFA settings the way you want for people on the outside, things like that. Conditional access policies that target specific web applications like SharePoint, those also continue to be enforced because SharePoint is SharePoint and you're still within your tenant. So you might have some things to think about there with maybe the way you've rolled out something like conditional access across your org. When all of a sudden your org's not really your org anymore, it's your org plus this other B2B direct connected org.
Yes. There's that to think about. There's something else I was just thinking of. It's escaping me right now. B2B, we talked about those. I'm drawing a blank, Scott.
We did. I guess like while you're trying to think of that, it probably sounds like we're pretty down on like B2B and like, oh my gosh, you have to do this direct connect configuration and all these kinds of things. It's probably not the end of the world. Like it's actually a good thing at the end of the day. Like it reconnects you with your business stakeholders. You'll be closer to the business. You'll understand what's going on. And it is ultimately like less friction. So one of the kind of longstanding issues with B2B guests was having to take them through the whole invitation flow. So I'm going to add this external user into my tenancy. They're going to get the invite. They have to click the invite with the magic link from that and blah, blah, blah. Then they're created as a user in my tenant. I can see them as an external user and all those kinds of things. You don't need to do that anymore once B2B Direct Connect is configured. Like, you're just in the boat where you've said, I trust this other organization. And through that implicit trust, there's no longer this need to add each individual external user as a B2B guest. So that could make things easier for you, depending on how you've set up and kind of rolled things out so far.
Right. I agree. I remembered what I was going to say, but going along with what you said, I'm in the same boat. Like you look at all the setup stuff with it and it's like, I wish it was just going to work. Like there's a whole other layer of things to think about. But overall, I like where this direct connect trusting between the tenancies is going. Like you said, versus always dealing with inviting guests and all of that. So while it is more set up on the front end, I think once it's set up, hopefully this will provide a lot more ease of use when you are doing that cross-tenant stuff. I even think of different projects I do. Like I have more than three different Office 365 accounts, but I have three different Office 365 accounts that I use Teams with regularly that are also invited as guests to different tenancies. So I have this whole weird conglomeration of different accounts and guest accounts and access to different channels with different guest accounts. This is definitely appears to be a step towards, if I'm working on a specific project or I need access to a specific channel or certain content within a team, being able to not have to do as much tenant switching. So again, I hope it all works like they say. It looks good from the surface, but it is definitely a step in that right direction, I hope.
Hey, I mean, there's a 30-second video you can go view about it all working. So I'm sure it just comes together just like the video.
Just like the video, because nobody ever edits videos to make it look. Never mind. I won't say anything. I'm not making any accusations. I've edited videos to make things look like they work smoother than they actually do.
We've all done that.
And what I was going to say, yes, sorry. We've all done that.
That was it.
Yes, absolutely. It does look like you can control, this will also be rolled into your team's policies in your team's admin center. Mm-hmm. So it isn't that, just like with private channels, you can turn private channels on or off in certain policies. You'll be able to go and modify your team admin policies, your team's policies in the team's admin center to specify who can or cannot create these private channels as well. So all of that will be supported. Shared channels are going to support all the information protection, DLP, discovery, legal hold, communication compliance, information barriers, audit logs. All of that will be in there. The other thing I think it's important to note too, because it could get confusing, is this one's a little more straightforward. The host tenant, where the channel is created. So when I go create a channel and I share it, I am going to own all of that data, which makes sense. The SharePoint site's in my tenant. All of the information is going to live in my tenant related to that shared channel. But the other thing to think about is the host's compliance policies. So me as the creator, if I have certain compliance policies around DLP or sensitive information types, who can do what? All of those trickle down as well. From the sensitivity label perspective and all those compliance policies. When you think about it, it still makes sense because I host it all, but I could also see people getting in that boat where they access a shared channel and they're working in it and they forget, or they're just not thinking that, oh, this is shared, it's in another host. Why don't I have certain sensitivity labels, or why are certain policies preventing me to do things? It could be, or it probably is, that host tenant's compliance policies that are putting certain restrictions in place or causing it to maybe look different than you may think about. Again, because it might just get blurry because you just see it alongside all your other channels.
Yeah. And it's like anything else. You've got to plan it out and just keep those things in the back of your head. Like, which policies apply where? Like, am I dealing with an outbound access policy for users from my org to your org? Am I dealing with an inbound policy? Where is the data hosted? Because all of those things that you mentioned, DLP, retention, sensitivity labels, all those things, like, they come from the organization that is hosting the data, which makes sense, right? Like, that data has to live someplace and it's going to be governed by the rules of the place where it lives. And maybe that's a consideration to you as well, like for your users when you're giving them guidance about things. It's like, hey, for these types of things, if you're doing cross-org collaboration or cross-tenant collaboration, those absolutely need to live in our tenant per policy. Like, they can't go in somebody else's.
Yep. And to that note too, this is another thing that was called out, and actually some of the comments on here is this is purely a B2B scenario where guest accounts could be the B2C where you could use like your MSA mm-hmm. account and have guest access through a Microsoft account. This is 100% B2B.
Yeah.
There is no B2C scenario for this.
Yeah. When they say direct connect, like, you're not establishing some grand trust between the kind of public endpoint for login.microsoft.com, which includes all the B2C identities that exist out there. It is truly a tenant-to-tenant kind of hookup and a mutual trust that's established between those.
Yep. So I think that gives us a good summary. Once these are out, maybe we'll have to go in and play with these on our To The Cloud YouTube that we tend to play with stuff, give more of a visual representation. Again, I'm waiting for access. These should start hitting first release tenants here any day. We're recording this on the 21st. It'll get released on the 24th, if I'm doing my math right. 24th or 25th. They're saying these are going to be out in preview by the end of March. So yeah, hopefully if you don't see this, you'll see it soon, and I'll be able to get hands-on with it here soon as well to provide any additional insights, or we can again go play with it on YouTube.
Yeah, so the other thing to consider there for you is not just being in like first release rings, but also making sure that you configure your update policies for Teams the right way. So take a trip through the Teams admin center. You can either configure the default policy, or I guess the global, like the org-wide default policy, or you can create a one-off update policy
rings,
in there.
Yep. Yeah.
So you want to make sure that you're following the Office preview and that you're enabled for Teams public preview. And then once that kicks into effect, you can actually go into your Teams client itself. Like, you've got like the three dots in the Teams client. You go about, public preview, switch to the public preview, and then be able to do the rest of it, like the B2B direct connect and all that stuff.
Yep, exactly. So again, I keep waiting for mine. I don't have it as of yet, but I did go turn on the cross-tenant stuff. So fingers crossed, hopefully soon, and I have a couple different tenants, so I can hopefully turn them on in two different tenants and play with some of this a little more.
One can only hope, right?
Yes. But I think that wraps us up for today. I have some work to do and a new doorbell to install.
Ooh, exciting.
Yes, my current Nest, Google Nest doorbell. Did I tell you about this weird short side topic derailing this?
No.
If you ring the doorbell, the video stops working. So I can actually watch somebody on the camera walk up to the door. They push the doorbell button and the video just blanks out. And then you wait like 30 seconds and the video starts working again.
That's cool.
So there's some weird short in it that, I mean, it kind of defeats the purpose. I can see them walking up to the door, but then I have no idea if they're still there or not, if they rang the doorbell.
Yeah, I can see where that gets a little frustrating for you. So new doorbell time.
So new doorbell. I am switching to the Unify. So Ubiquiti Unify has their own doorbell that'll integrate in with my UDM Pro. Mm-hmm. And then it also puts everything locally. So I'm not quite so dependent on always having an internet connection, at least if we're home and we want to be able to access it. So we'll give the Unify doorbell a shot. Going back to our smart homes.
Cough, cough. About. HomeBridge and HomeKit Secure Video works with that as well.
Yes, that is also kind of another reason is for whatever reason, Google Nest, they tend to close off a lot of that access. So I'm hoping this also opens up some of those possibilities.
Yeah, I think some of it is just they're not standard like RTSP cameras. Like they're going over kind of their own proprietary protocols and using their own APIs for everything. Versus somebody like Ubiquiti, who's just a straight like RTSP stream and boom, you can kind of hijack that with rights to do it, right? Because it's on your network and broadcasting across it and be able to capture that traffic and send it where you need to. So that makes it a little bit easier.
Yes. So some updates coming around that. But for now, we will let you go.
All right. Sounds good.
Go sort through the last 500 emails or so that you have.
I think I'm going to be doing this for... a little while.
All right. Enjoy. And we will talk to you next week.
Sounds good. Thanks, Ben.
If you enjoyed the podcast, go leave us a 5-star rating in iTunes. It helps to get the word out so more IT pros can learn about Office 365 and Azure. If you have any questions you want us to address on the show or feedback about the show, feel free to reach out via our website, Twitter, or Facebook. Thanks again for listening and have a great day.